Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Just Matt Webb on the board. SP Futures up 975 after a little bit of shellacking yesterday due to the capital gains announcement. I think the new administration has found out that you make these announcements in the middle of the day and you make a trade beforehand, you can make money. What do you think, Matty?
We've seen that before over the last several years.
Yeah, it's good for the Republicans. It's good for the Democrats. What can I say? Dow Futures up 72. Kevin, how are you? Are you there?
Well, gains rate, too. It was going to be like 80, 90,
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes to pay for all this other crap.
What is it? What was the movie? 110, 220, whatever it takes, electric? Was it a movie where the guy was Mr. Miles?
I don't know that movie. Movie reference that you snuck by me.
What was the one where the guy ended up being he was home and then he ended up just wearing a flannel shirt every day to find the wife got so disgusted he... She goes, the least you can do is fix the electric, and the electrician comes over, and he goes, well, we'll get 220 and one... Yeah, you know, whatever, 110, 220, whatever it takes. You know.
Was that Mr. Mom?
Might have been Mr. Mom, yeah. I can see Matty Weber doing that. Yeah, whatever, 110, 220, whatever it takes.
I feel like I've been doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah. So what place are you? Is that a 3-flat, or what is that?
Yeah, it's a 3-flat.
Which one are you guys?
We're the top.
Is there an elevator?
No.
You guys like that three floor thingy. So.
It's a great thing as far as once you're up there because you have beautiful views and outdoor spaces, and we have a second floor, which is always nice. But as far as moving is concerned, it's pretty dreadful.
What about babies?
Well, that's another thing.
What about Venkman?
He loves it.
He likes it? He likes the new hood?
Well, I don't know yet. He's still dealing with all the boxes in the place, and no dog likes any sort of change like that.
No, God, no. No, they absolutely do not.
People don't like it much either.
No. Well, you know, you guys will like it. It's all your traffic noise and stuff.
So, Matt, are you a unpack everything on day one person, or are you, I'll get to it bit by bit over the next month?
I am very much the day one. I have a certain OCD with that. So today, we got moved in last night, and I knowing I had to get up early, I still spent about 3 or 4 hours really getting into it. And then today I plan to be pretty much done by the end of the day.
Well, do you have places to put it? Do you got shelves up and all that stuff?
Well, shelving and different things like that will be sort of the last thing we do. But we do have a big storage unit in the bottom. So putting a lot of stuff in there, getting everything sort of staged up, getting stuff into the cabinets. Once I have everything sort of out and somewhat organized, then I can really start like putting up shelving and things like that. I was very frustrated yesterday because we were getting two TVs mounted and we were going to have the internet and cable set up. So the internet and cable people send us the boxes and they say, hey, the previous owners, they had the same service. So basically we just flip it on and use these boxes, plug it in, follow the three directions, and you're good to go. We don't even have to send a guy on site. So Jill says, great. And I say, immediate red flag to me because I've moved 20 times in my life. There's never been a seamless set up the cable and internet. Just never. And so now you're not even going to send a guy on site. So anyway, I say, okay, that's fine. Let me worry about the TV guys mounting it first, and then I'll set it up. So the TV mounting guys come. Of course, that is never as easy as you think it's going to be. They quote that it's going to be between 30 minutes and an hour. It takes 2.5. But they get it done, and then we eat some dinner, and then I'm like, all right, I'm going to go get the TV, the cable and internet set up. Sure enough, two issues. One, nothing works. I plug it in. I'm doing it right. Nothing's working. So I'm like, all right, maybe I missed something. So I pull out the directions. Turns out I did it exactly how the directions
say. You did the directions the second time around, though.
Exactly. Yeah, because I've done it before. Oh, I knew how to do it. And did the directions the second time around. Still didn't work. So that's one thing. So we call, and of course now we got an Xfinity guy coming today. Second thing is I'm doing the upstairs TV, so I'm like, well, let me go try the downstairs TV. Well, the guys that mounted the TV, and you know, maybe it's not their fault, maybe it's the mounting company, I don't know, but the mount covers up all the jacks on the back of that TV. So even if it did work, I literally can't even plug it in because all the jacks are covered by the mount. So now I'm
going
to have to...
You're sitting there going, what were you thinking, installers?
Right. So what are the installers thinking, one? And two, what is this mounting company thinking that your product covers up jacks of the TV and makes the TV completely useless? So, yeah. So now I got a whole other issue today. So I couldn't sleep last night because I'm so pissed about the two things I thought that would be done that still aren't done.
All right, well, at least you and Jill don't have a reason to kill each other because you have reasons to kill other people.
That's exactly right.
And moving, you know, moving is the ultimate test of a marriage.
I always thought that buying light fixtures was.
Oh, God.
No, I just didn't go. Yeah, whatever you get's fine. All right, but I want your input. No, you don't.
we need a Stocks and Jacks poll. I'm going to say that 70% of the crap he puts in the storage downstairs has never been touched when he moves.
Well, besides like the Christmas decorations, I would go as far as to say maybe 100%.
I mean, that's always my thing. If I didn't unpack that box, but I moved into the place, I really don't need to take it to the next place.
I know, and I tell myself that, and we did get rid of a ton of stuff, and yet there's still some things you look at. And, you know, whether it's a gift from your mom or your grandma or whatever it was, and you're like, God, there's, for some reason, I'd feel really bad throwing this out, even though I've literally never used it once and never even opened it in 5 years.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it is. I mean, you know, people, when I had a big house in Beverly and moved into a one bedroom apartment, you can imagine what a fiasco that was. I mean, what do you do with your lawnmower? Oh,
right,
that's,
yeah.
I mean, I really don't need a lawnmower in this one bedroom high rise. I mean, I don't think so anyway. One of those deals. So we had a interesting move down in the market yesterday, Kevin, and we have spread. I've been sneakily short these bonds, meaning long interest rates, for my clients now for a while, and I'm going to say we did very well the first five positions, and the last two have sort of clunked, and happens. But this week I'm thinking, all right, let me get this straight. Gold is back up to 7 month highs. Inflation is all over the news, and these bonds do nothing but go up this week. I'm thinking, gee, I wonder if our bumps in Washington have anything to do with this. So I look at of course, you can't look at the weekly money supply. Well, how these guys have the stones to do that? Do not give anybody any numbers now. I astounding me. But so the only one you can get now on a weekly basis is the Fed balance sheet. So last week, in somewhat of an unremarkable week, I'd say worldwide, not that it, you know, was good or bad, it just, you know, it wasn't like a whole lot of stuff going on. $90 billion on the balance sheet in 1 week, Kevin. Do you think that's why the bonds are going up? Because our own buffoons are buying them. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, this is insanity. And we're, you know, now we come up with this capital gains thing. And, you know, I'm sorry. The whole part of the capital gains, and we'll get into that, you know, but all of a sudden now the new administration, no surprise to me, has absolutely zero plan, just like the old administration, in terms of how this is all going to work together. I mean, with this vilifying of people, well, first of all, you go back to the basic, it wasn't Bonnie and Clyde, it was one of the other guys who said, why do you rob the banks? Well, that's where the money is. I mean, there's a certain logic to... Yeah.
Patty Bulger or something like that.
Yeah. And, so, I mean, I don't know. There's this idea that we've actually starting to vilify the people that have money. And you look at the, you know, and we talked a lot about the, you know, the George Floyd situation and the fact that, you know, the policeman, you know, did a lot of awful wrong things. I honestly believe that. But you look at the other side of the flip side of it. and you look at the George Floyd piece, I mean, what do we have here? We have somebody who's somewhat of a rap sheet. He's out trying to pass a bad bill, drugged up to beat the band on money that, of course, somebody probably gave him. Probably has never paid a real tax bill in his life. I mean, an absolute taker all the way through, Kevin. Now, there's reasons for it. I mean, who the hell knows? But the point is, there's no romance there. There's no, this is the way you want people to live. It's like the Fifth Ward in New Orleans in the flood. Nobody wants a Fifth Ward again. People living in places that nobody wants to live in, probably not paying much rent. Everybody in some sort. That's not the goal of this country. The goal is to have everybody participating, making a living, living okay, taking care of your kids, and paying into the common good for everybody else. I mean, are we losing sight of that at all? I mean,
Tom, if that's the goal of this country, are we really that incompetent when it comes to executing on it?
I think so many people are making money.
The things that we do, one would swear that the goal is not that.
I think the way that the money has been set up, and this is probably no individual's fault. I mean, clearly, you and I know, and Maddie knows, we know people that have spent all kinds of time doing charity work and doing things and giving back, okay? But I think there's our buddy, not Dr. J, the other doc, you know what I'm talking about, says you have no idea how much money there is in these bleep hole wards with the crummy hotels, you know, the hooker hotels, the drugs. The money in those areas for police and people in government is dramatic. Nobody wants that. I mean, there's reasons why some people didn't want, you know, Skid Row on Madison to be turned into beautiful places, because Skid Row made some people a lot of money. I mean, we have to get the collective will to stop this, Kevin. We can't make the drug trade be profitable for some of the aldermen and some of the people in the police force. We can't let that happen, and yet we do.
Right. It's profitable. It's profitable for the dealers and the various gangsters. But then when on top of it you pile on that the people making policy profit from it, we are just in a world of hurt.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no, and I think what's happening is we, you know, point fingers, and it's no longer just at the white middle to upper class, because there's an awful lot of Asian and black people in the middle upper class now, fortunately. I mean, we're finally starting to make that move. I mean, there are an awful lot of African-American professors and lawyers and everything. I mean, maybe not as many as there should be, but there's a hell of a lot more than there were, and there are people in that group. I mean, this idea that you're pointing the fingers at the people who are, quote, contributing on the other end, I mean, there's no, I mean, this whole idea that next year, the Chicago Public Schools, now they're gonna have more money per student than they had this year. This year, some areas, people worked their fanny off and had a tremendous year for people, students and teachers, under the worst of circumstances. In other areas, they didn't do squat, Kevin. Kids didn't show up, teachers didn't do anything. I mean, we all know that. It's incredibly uneven.
They lost like 3 billion kids, just who never engaged.
Yeah.
Remotely in class.
That's what I'm saying. It's very, very uneven.
And just disappeared.
Yet I know
from the educational system.
My nephew's wife was telling me, she goes, I couldn't do 2-3 years like this. The amount of time it's taken me per day to chase these people down, work with them afterward, because I can't just do it in class. It's doing it online. It's later at night. If you did it right and the parents were involved, I think he actually made it through the year okay, but at huge cost to both the parents, the kids, and the teachers. Right, but at least you did it. But other areas, I don't think you did squat. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, there's kids that didn't even go to seventh grade that are going to find themselves in eighth grade next year. For what reason?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are we doing here? The idea, if you don't get everybody to contribute at some level, then guess what? Other people got to pay a lot more, right? And I think people are getting mighty pissed off that not only are they contributing a lot, but they're getting vilified for it. I mean, just saying. But
well, and what's interesting is if you look at people in general, and you've talked a lot about the management class, so we'll use that term. There's plenty that you can use, but we'll go with management class. And a lot of people really do resent the management class.
And with good reason, you know, by the way.
These are the college-educated people who don't know a damn thing about my job, but are perfectly willing to tell me how to do it. You know, and that's how they find how they show up in the business world, and how they got to their positions and so on is a bone of contention. But people generally do not resent wealthy people who went out and made it happen and earned it themselves.
Oh, absolutely not. I agree with you.
That's a respected area, and yet we get from the political world the Elizabeth Warren, you didn't build that mentality. You're there because of the largesse of, now in some cases, yes, they are there because of their connections and the largesse of government, but the idea that you're there because of the largesse of government and on the backs of others is how you built your business is simply not the case in so many businesses, and I think people, I think that's a misread of the populace to think that those kinds of folks are who have really made it are resented. I don't think they are.
Well, I think there's a big difference between the guy who invented penicillin and invented the method to make it on a scale at which everybody in the world could have it if they needed it and save life after life after life, and the CEO. Five people after him and never did a thing in his life except played a political game and getting that job, and now does nothing but buy other firms. I mean, there's a big difference. I think. I mean, it's because I've been in a board. I mean, and the CBOE board was as boards go was pretty darn good, but I could absolutely see the day where in the Amazon place they spend three quarters of the time figuring out a way to fight the union and make sure that the salaries are $11 versus 11 and a quarter, then immediately after the coffee served, bring in a consultant and say your top 15 people aren't paid enough. I mean, there's no doubt that's happening countrywide. That you spend half the meeting trying to pay some people as little as you can, and then the next half of the meeting trying to pay the top 50 people so much more, so much you can't even find. Dreams of avarice can't even get in there. I mean, there's a total disconnect between what, quote, they deserve and what I deserve. And there's zero discipline from the shareholders. I mean, the SEC, probably one of the biggest things they do wrong in my mind is they empower the management class versus the shareholders. I mean, they absolutely take the side of management over the side of the shareholders every time they want to replace people. And why is that their job, Kevin?
Don't know. But anyway, I don't know why they see it that way.
I don't know, but let's talk a second. You know, we got time before this. The capital gains tax, and I mean, everybody knows, my thoughts on this. And again, nobody wants to do anything that I want to do, Kevin, because I just want it to be fair. Okay, so if you have ordinary income and you pay tax on it, everybody knows how that works. Now, capital gains are money that you invest. Now, economically, there's one, there's a few identities in this world, and one of the identities is savings equals investment. All right, so if you don't have people investing, saving and investing on their own, you're not going to get business investment. So when somebody decides to buy a stock or put money in a bank or buy a corporate bond for somebody else to use their money to build and do stuff, that's the way the system works, because very unusually that the guy was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and has all kinds of money, or just for happens to win the lottery, that he has the idea about building a new factory and hiring 50 people. It's just, it doesn't normally match up that way. People have different skill sets. So the person who has the ideas generally needs capital to put his ideas to fruition, correct? And what the entire mess, the stock market, the banks, all that stuff, that whole part of society is designed to match up the capital with the ideas. And that's really the basis of it. I don't know how many people know it's that basic, but it is. I mean, that's the drill. And so the idea that people are investing, but when you invest, it's not ordinary income. You go to work, you make three widgets, they pay you $20, and you go home. That's ordinary income. All right, everybody knows what that is. Now, investing is I put my money out there, hopefully with somebody else's idea, and if he's right, people get hired, people make money, blah, blah, blah. Now, I could be wrong, all right? So I could actually lose on this gig. Well, you're not going to lose on ordinary income. I mean, if you go one day where you make the three widgets and the guy doesn't pay, you're probably not showing up on second day, right? So it's a different game. Now, so first of all, in this mess yesterday, notice what you did. The thing you'll never see, Kevin, never in our lifetime, or maybe in Maddie's kids he doesn't have yet, lifetime. In the midst of raising the capital gains tax, we still didn't say, now if I put $100,000 in an investment and I make money, well, should I pay taxes on it? Well, sure. Now the question is how much. Well, but if I lose the $100,000, I can't deduct it, right? Because I can only deduct $3,000 a year, which is what I'm talking about. It's the dumbest thing I've ever. But never the Democrats, the Republicans, as people argue back and forth which side's the knaves, and you can fight fist fights in bars and coffee shops. Neither side is going to raise that number. Now, question is why? Why? So
it is what they call a revenue source. It's a tax. It's revenue. I hate that the government calls anything revenue, because revenue is what you get for selling stuff, not what you get for not what you confiscate from people. They don't know what to do if they lose a source of funding.
Well, that's right.
So that's why you're not going to see it, is because once you're taxed, and nobody, there's not very many people that like to give it back, and not very many people in government that like to give it back. They're looking for the next tax, not repealing the old one.
Well, that's why when they come up with the red light cameras, it turns out they're a total scam. And well, wait a minute. How are we going to replace the money like we already spent it? You're right. It has nothing. But right now so I'd say.
Yeah, I remember hearing somebody on the radio. This goes back to my Milwaukee days, and the complaint was always about police, hiding out. In other words, what's the relationship the police should have with the public? Should they be hiding behind bridges trying to catch people, or should they be out visible so that the speeds on the highways are maintained, because people see the police regularly and they don't want to speed? And given that option, that option put to some of the government people, and saying, why don't you just change it out so that you get the desired effect? They said, well, we don't know how we're going to replace that revenue. Oh, so your speed traps are a tax then, just like you're talking about with the red light cameras. And that's really all we're doing, is we just keep finding new ways to tax people.
Well, that's right. I mean, and the people who
Max, Matt, you got to put Tax Man into the bumper music here.
Well, that really is. But right now, it's not for me. We're going to go for the more than this after the break, because we got long term and short term. I think yesterday we're talking about short term capital gains. Okay, so now right out of the gate, if somebody goes to work and makes money, you pay tax on it, and that's fine, right? Now, if you invest $100,000 or $1,000,000 or whatever you got, or $10,000 into some project or some stock. Now, especially with the market up as high as it is, if you invest $100,000, here's your takeaway. If I win, the government takes 43.4% now if I make over $200,000 a year. Or if it's $1,000,000, I guess, on the 39%, but it's 3.8%. It's the investment tax. It's over $200,000. So if I win, these bleeps grab 43% of my money. If I lose the $100,000, I'm stuck for 33 years at $3,000 a year. So at some point, does this game become absolutely useless, Kevin? I mean, useless to somebody who's investing.
Yeah, because what they'll get over time is they will get less investment as a result of that.
Yeah.
At least less discernible investment placed by people who pay taxes in the United States. And if the intent of the tax code is to encourage people not just to put money into investments, but to invest it and make the investments stable, to give them a longer term, so that business doesn't always have to be worried about
Well, if you, and I don't think you should ever, through the tax law, and maybe mildly, but I don't think you should be constantly encouraging people's behavior through the tax law. I'm not one of those guys that likes to do that.
Yeah, but we do that all the time.
I know, but I'm saying,
I wish we wouldn't, but we do.
But right now, if somebody, you know, comes to PTI, I mean, obviously we try and protect, we try and do stuff different so it doesn't affect our people the most. But if somebody wants to buy, you know, pick a stock, one of the future .com, let's say Bitcoin. Somebody wants to buy Bitcoin. And you say, well, you realize, of course, if you win, you got a 43% partner. If you lose, it's all on you. Because if the person has a choice, I mean, you could turn around and maybe foolishly invest your money in U.S. government bonds at 0.5%, you know, if it's a 5-year or something. Well, at least that's an investment decision, okay? But now you know you're going to have to pay taxes on the 0.5% or 1% or 1.7 if you do 10 years. That's pretty straightforward, unless they change that too. But it's the other part, you're trying to make a decision between one and the other. So now all of a sudden, the decision on the investment part, on the capital investment part is, well, God, I got a serious partner if I win, and by the way, he disappears if I lose. You know, that's really kind of where we are. Then you add the long-term, short-term part to it, and we don't know what they're going to do with that. And then you say, a reasonable man, like me maybe, might say, why don't we just index that piece? Because clearly, if you buy a 57 Chevy, you know, at a spot where, say, 2 years ago, say you paid $50,000 for the thing, if it's cherry. Well, now we've got this inflation. Look what's happening to used car, collector's cars. That car could go for $100,000 now. But look at the inflation. Well, that's my next pun topic is, when you start bleeping the CPI number, you can't even use inflation as a guide, because the inflation is going to tell you there wasn't any. In the meantime, the person who bought the Chevy at 50 and it's now 75, did he really make any money? I mean, right? I mean, but if the general inflation is counted properly, and all of a sudden a guy buys a building in 1950, you know, for $100,000 and now sells it for $300,000, did he make any money? If the CPI is up 4%, you know, 4 times, and the house is only up, or the building's up 3. So you've got those kind of issues as well, because we have a government that's trying to inflate their way out of their problems. So we got all this stuff kind of, you know, going back and forth, and I don't trust Joe Biden to either care or understand any of this, nor did I Trump, nor did I Obama. It's not their game. And you know, I just, and anyway, SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 25. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just met over the board. SP futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 25. We got the Dow futures up 36, trying to make a little bit of a comeback on yesterday where we took about a 30-point hit as soon as they came out with this capital gains number. Of course, you got all the knuckleheads coming on CNBC effort. Oh, geez, why is everybody surprised? I knew this was coming. You know, give me a break. Yeah, everybody knows everything, Kevin. Everybody knows everything but us. Just saying. DAX down 60.4%, FTSE down 37.5%, CAC around down 15.5%. We're in Asia, the Nikkei down 167. These guys were up huge yesterday, were down huge the day before, another down today. Down 167.6%, Shanghai up 9.3%. Boy, it's got to be kind of fun trading this Nikkei these days. I mean, it's hard to do over here. Hang Seng up 323, 1.1%, so another big mover today. Yesterday, just as a way of review, the Dow down 321. It was down over 400 for a while. That's a full percent. S&P down 38.9%. NASDAQ down 131.95%. Bonds, 155 unchanged. Bund, minus 0.26. Japan, positive 0.07. UK, positive 0.73. Oil up 27 cents, 61.70. Brent up 15, 65.55. West Texas seems to be settling over 60 now for quite a while, so maybe it'll hang in there. Natural gas unchanged, 274. RBOB unchanged, 198. We've got gold up 490, 1786. The third straight weekly gain in gold if it hangs in there. Silver unchanged, 26.17. Copper up 4 cents, 431. It's continuing to creep up. We had earnings in FCX the other day. The stock was down. I played it for to be up, but now it's creeping back up today, so who knows, maybe I'll eventually be right, even though I probably wasn't right out of the gate, but we'll see about that. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're looking great on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking good. No crashes or stalls to report. Southside expressways are all quiet, too. Same for Lakeshore Drive and the suburban tollways. Only crash in the area is down south. Route 394 on the northbound side between Highway 30 and Glenwood Dyer Road is closed because of an earlier jackknife semi that happened earlier this morning. The semi is in the ditch on the left and is wrapped and caught in the high-tension cable barrier, which can't be good. Traffic is being forced off at Highway 30 to get around that because Route 394 is closed, and it sounds like it'll be closed for the foreseeable future, certainly for the rest of the morning. So avoid that area. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early and then some sunshine later on. A bit warmer than it's been the last couple of days as we head more toward normal highs today and then above normal highs next week as we'll be in the 70s and 80s. But today, partly cloudy skies with a high of 61. Right now, it's overcast and 45 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 86 today. Right now, it's clear and 66. In sports, don't look now, but the Cubs are back to 500 after sweeping the Mets. Mets came in at 7-4, one of the better teams in the National League, and the Cubs took care of them last night, 4-3 in 10 innings. Jason Hayward with the walk-off RBI single.
to win that one in the bottom of the 10th. But the Cubs bullpen was very good late in that game, 8th, 9th, and 10th innings. Cubs bullpen kept the Cubs tied right at 3 and let the offense scratch across a run. So the Cubs are now 9-9 after a 6-9 start.
So you're still starting with the guy on second base in the 10th inning, right?
That's right. Both teams. White Sox were off last night. They're back in action tonight down on the south side as they'll host the Rangers. That's a 7:10 Chicago time first pitch. Diamondbacks were in a barn burner with the Reds last night, and they beat Cincinnati 14-11 in 10 innings. 25 runs scored in that one. NBA basketball, the Bulls bounced back after a bad loss the other night to blow out the Hornets 108-91. Suns lost to the Celtics 99-86. Blackhawks were off. They're back in action tonight as they'll welcome the Predators to the UC.
I bet they're playing the Predators for like the sixth time in a row.
That's right.
It is the fifth time in a row, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, 7 p.m. puck drop tonight. Cheap.
So I don't suppose they let you bring the brooms in anymore.
For the sweep?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I think you can still get them in the bleachers.
We got to go through the metal detector with the broom.
You have to get one of those old, plastic or wood ones. I don't think anything with metal on it, you're not bringing in.
You could always have somebody fly one in, you know.
You'll toss over the wall. The wall's getting pretty high.
That's what. Don't ever mention the Jill if you guys are, you know, having trouble. You go by the broom saying, "Why don't you take one of these out for a spin?" You know, that doesn't go over well.
Probably not.
Only if you want to die.
Yeah,
that would be the one where Jill would be sitting there testifying in court.
Yes.
You know, and she would then turn and look to the judge and say, "And then, Your Honor, that's when I killed him."
So we do have a couple of...
And that would get her off.
Yeah.
Oh, God. We do have a couple of Twitter comments, one based on your guys' conversation last segment. This is from Marbles. He says, "Hey, Chief, will you do an episode about these CEOs borrowing against their stock from investment banks against their ownership equity and spending it personally without being taxed because they roll the loans? How about claim that as income current year? Musk claimed broke to JDG."
Yeah, I think the listeners probably know there's a few things I would do. I get rid of that carried interest piece that nobody seems to be able to do. Talk about it. Whenever the left and the right argue, that's one thing you can bring up. How come neither one of you guys, since you've had a chance to be in power now, like three times a piece over the last 20 years, can't possibly change that one, right? We can't do that. We can't stop the stock buybacks and just make people pay dividends, right, for whatever reason. And what was the third? I'm fleeting here, but I'll think of it in a second. The idea that if your dad bought stock at $1 and then leaves it to you at $100, that your basis becomes $100. Why? Somebody bought it at $1. Why did somebody get $99 free?
I agree with you on all those.
So we're not going to change that. But it's funny. I was in went over to a wedding in Denmark of all places. And in Denmark, instead of the father of the bride giving away the bride, the father of the groom gives away the groom. So it's a little bit different. Well, this guy was working
for him.
Seems
a little off.
Yeah. A little more accurate.
Yeah, happy to give away the groom, probably. But this dude, he was adopted, and his adopted parents weren't going over. So he invited a few of us, and I was the guy who was going to, walk down the aisle and give them away, right, which is whatever. It was pretty neat though, because the wedding reception was in this castle, and it was pretty neat. I mean, something built like the 1300s kind of thing. You got to walk around it a little bit, but anyway, the father-in-law of the wife, who I knew real well, she was over here. She was actually a sports, not a Sports Illustrated model, but there was another sports magazine that had. People were around in bathing suits at the time. It wasn't Sports Illustrated. It was one like it. And she was a very attractive lady, obviously. But I'm riding around with her dad. Of course, nobody else would get up in the morning and go to the store with the guy except for me. So we're riding around in this Volvo. It had to be... And he owned a car repair place that he sold. And I'm sure that car is still running. It was some four-cylinder, four on the floor, rolled down windows, no AC. I think he might have had power steering, but that might have been it. And the thing just ran, right? Well, he'd sold his business, and the profits, I think Denmark, he had to pay him like 90%. Now, granted, you know, the dude had a living, and he probably got paid at his own firm and those kinds of things, and he, you know, took care of his family in a nice house. I mean, not real nice, but nice enough. And it had a nice life and sold it, and, you know, won't possess anybody to invest in that building, in that business, if at the end of the day you got to give somebody else 90%. What if you lost? I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, Matty, you going in to make a sports bet, not saying you do. Oh, by the way, if you win, we're taking half. If you lose, it's all on you. I mean, it's a horrible bet, right?
Yeah, I think I'm skipping that one.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exactly where the capital gains are right now. Think of it that way. They're into India for 44% if you win. By the way, if you lose, it's on you. Pretty much.
Good system.
Yeah, it's a good system if you can do it. But why, you know, how do these people get away with this? I have no idea. You know, how do you get away with the?
But it's they get away with it. But what is the mindset that even thinks of it in the first place?
It depends on who. Right now, the people that are in charge are that we have to find ways to give money to people, COVID or otherwise, because those are the people who vote for us. When the Republicans are in charge, we try and cut back on the part that the people who are paying, because we think those people are our people, which in fact, I'm not so sure the either side's right now on who the hell their people even are, but I think they're even getting that wrong. But clearly, the Trump administration, the Trump people, the Republicans, the 25% that they think are their base, they weren't enough to win. Now, I don't think that the Democrats, if the 25% of the people that you're going to throw money at for whatever reason by taking it away from the other people, well, that doesn't match either. You're pissing off 75% of the people to take care of 25. It seems like both of these guys, their math is off, Kevin, or is it just me?
Well, I think the party Republicans are right there with the Democrats. You know, maybe not in the same percentages, but their mindset is exactly the same. I think that's part of why Trump was so unpopular, and he was, you know, with the politicians, and that is also, you know, that's true. You know, people, even McConnell, I don't think McConnell liked him very much or wanted anything. McConnell just didn't want to lose his position of power, so he played along to a great extent as long as that suited him. But I think that was part of the visceral reaction to Trump, is not that he never went with the program, but a lot of times he didn't go with the program, and that was just not going to fly anywhere.
Well, what is the program?
The program is that you build a big government bureaucracy, which is the store of power, and you know, if you're a bureaucrat of any kind, it's all about how big your budget is and how many people work for you. So you have to build that out, and then your only philosophy gets to be who do I nail to pay for this?
Well, it's interesting. A 2 week span doesn't go by that we don't end up somewhere. Audrey and I, with our cousins group of people who are righter than Attila the Hun, or someplace, even in this office, where somebody will opine on term limits and as being the holy grail for all this stuff, which is such a load of crap. I can't even go there, because on the one hand, we can't the last thing we want is to benefit corporate executives that are on the 3-year plan, okay? Because we've realized that has not. I'm not saying politicians should be there for life or anything like that. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that we decided that the 3-year plan, paying somebody on annual profits and giving their bonus on that, is going to lead you down all kinds of roads, be it pollution, be it whatever, being it not training people, being it not having new products. If you can take your money and go after 3 years, it's a horrible way to design things. Yet everybody's convinced that if you put somebody in Congress for 4 years and they somehow pass all these crazy laws that benefit God knows who, maybe themselves, and let them out, that's okay too. There should be no long-term view in Congress or in the presidency. I mean, but clearly there's no long-term view here. I mean, the idea, I mean, look at what's happening in Chicago, the money here. I mean, we're going to put more money into schools this year. I'm not saying, you know, whatever, but Kevin, the numbers are 80,000 people a year are leaving. If you put a politician in there with a 10-year plan, not saying you should never, don't ever, you know, tweet out that this chief guy says we should have the mayor for 10 years. No, I didn't say that. But if you don't have that sort of a 10-year plan for your city, and you're talking 800,000 people left after 10 years, I don't care what budget you have. It's no good, Kevin, is it? are we even talking?
Well, apparently they haven't figured that out yet.
Apparently not, no. But, you know, I don't care. You can put together every number in the world. If you subtract 800,000 people between now and 2031, I don't think you got much of a city, do you? And none of those numbers are going to work. Or is it just me?
Well, no, that's exactly the case. That's exactly what's going on, and that's why you have people, you know, mass exoduses out of some states and into others. There was a real funny clip I read in the last week showing the a sheriff from Florida saying, you know, we want to welcome all the millions of people who are moving this way. But I'm telling you right now, don't come down here and vote the same way you did when you were in New York, because then you're just going to get the same thing here.
Well, just don't vote me out when you get here. Isn't that really what he's saying?
Yeah, I don't know how much power, large scale power for that kind of stuff that the sheriff has, but yeah, I'm sure there's a very highly motivated self interest in that too.
Well, but
he's right, because that's exactly, you know, that's what's going to happen. That's what's happening. You're seeing that in Texas. All the Californians have moved to places like Texas or Colorado, and so now they're just turning those places into California again.
But why do we think this is the part that's sort of odd, Kevin? And I go back to the one professor I had. I was given a. Hal Snar yesterday, a bunch of crap that he sounded like George Stigler a couple times, because I really like Hal. I think he's terrific.
It was a really great segment. Yep.
And I hope he's not listening, because I don't know if I'm going to hear that, but I really do love the guy, because he's so bright it's scary. He doesn't even know how bright he is, and I don't want to be the first to tell him. But the interesting part that I remember from that class, and I know people say, I don't remember any class in college. Well, I do, and I remember, I mean, it was such
my students all remember their classes verbatim in college.
Yes, for you. Yes, just for you. Yes, just that. Kevin, George Stigler, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And you know what? And what you do, I bet you're just as good, to be honest with you. But he said, don't ever assume that these guys don't operate. Everybody's ever been in this room. You guys are all business guys, right? Well, actually, most of them are economics guys. There are a few business guys like me. He goes, you guys all sit there, and every one of you is going to say, if you only operated politics like a business, everything would be okay. And, of course, I didn't take that feint. But a few guys raised their hand, yes, yeah, kind of going. He goes, you guys are all wrong. They operated as a business. It's just a different business. Just because you don't understand how it works doesn't mean it's not a business. It is a business.
Well, with
of politics.
The exception that they do have virtually unlimited revenue, at least for some period of time.
Well, but look at what happened during the Clinton administration.
Let me rephrase that. They have guaranteed revenue.
Right. Well, to the extent that people are making money, yeah. We didn't have guaranteed revenue in 1934, did you?
I don't know. I wasn't around then, were you? You probably were.
Well, I mean, if you what was the song? Nothing from nothing means nothing or something? I mean, you can't get blood out of a turnip, as they say in Ireland. But, I mean, look what happened in the Clinton administration. We went to, and Carl will dispute this, we went to a budget surplus. Now, I'm sure Carl's right that if you actually added up every bean everywhere, it probably wasn't a surplus. Well, how did they do it, Kevin?
But we did go to a better budget than we had.
Yes. Now, how did we do it? Well, gee, we had a huge blow-off in the market. Like, where we may be having now, maybe. Don't sell because of me or anything like that. But let's put it this way. The chalk on the wall is starting to look an awful lot like the chalk in 1999. Just saying. So what happened, Kevin? An awful lot of people bought stock at $3 a share and sold it at 300 and had to pay, at the time, what, 30-something percent, And a lot of people bought it at 300 and sold it at 2 and didn't get anything for it, right? In terms of being able to write anything off. They just lost. Well, okay, sorry, they get $3,000 back. Now, you don't think that the people in politics aren't smart enough to figure that out? And they don't think that is a very likely outcome here? And especially with the things like Bitcoin. I mean, I'm not talking about this stock or that stock. I'm never going to say that. But right now we have you know, stocks that are 20, 80, 100, 120 times revenue. So the likelihood is at least a few of them are going to clunk. I'm not saying all of them. I mean, you've been our best cloud guy. And if you read between Kevin's lines, you're going to say that it's a very competitive business. Well, you have said, and I'll just repeat back to you, and that there's going to be some losers in there. And some of those losers are trading to beat the band at prices that you would never even, the dreams of avarice wouldn't come close to. So even though you could probably rattle your five or six favorites that are going to be the winners in the cloud, you can probably also rattle five or six clunks, maybe. And if you're right, the people who sold at the top in those clunks are going to be paying, are going to have a 45%, 43.4, sorry, partner in the government, and the people who lost aren't going to get anything. Very much like 99. Now, is that how we want to balance our budget? Is that on the backs of people like that?
I don't think so. And I think, you know, the moment that the capital gains increase passes, you're going to have people bailing out and taking their gains this year in this tax year if it's not effective for tax year 2021.
Well, that's another issue.
So that's going to be interesting for the market, won't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, but, you know, some of these people are true believers. I mean, you're never going to... I mean, if I had a dime for every person who says, I don't like this stock anymore, but I can't sell it because I got to pay taxes, if I had a dime for every dollar those people lost, I'd be the richest man in the country. Because
Now we're talking about people who are going to want to get out because what's the capital gains rate now?
Well, they didn't. You know, what was also not mentioned
and
yesterday.
So if it's going to double, you know, get out now, well, take your gain now, so that you don't have to pay the double tax.
Well, I did not see. And I read CNBC this morning. I didn't really see any breakdown between long term and short term. Did you? And right now, I think
I did not.
Right now. And I don't know what the long term is, but I think short term is what, 21? You get a break on the short term.
The ordinary income.
No, Carl will know when we get him out. He of course memorizes all this stuff. But it changes so often. I used to know this. I can tell you what it was when I took the class in Notre Dame, but it's probably changed since then. You think? Just a little.
Probably.
So what about the sports a little bit? What was the post mortem on the NCAA money wise? Was it a big year for? Did it make out? I mean, obviously the fans not as much.
You know, you asked me to look into that, and I did not. So I have to remember to do that so that we can really discuss it. I would imagine that from a viewership standpoint, they did pretty well. And I would I don't know how the individual teams did for their own expenses. On the one hand, I'm sure the sizes of their entourages were limited. On the other hand, they all had to park, at least until they lost, they had to park their butts in Indianapolis and stay there. Whether that was cheaper or more expensive would be an interesting question as well. But, the economics of having it all in one city is kind of interesting and rather different from the way it's been done in the past. So I'll be kind of interested to see how that shakes out. So
I'll make a note to prep
something for next week on that.
What did they, not that I really care where people stayed, but I am curious. Because of the COVID, I mean, we had a gentleman, he's been on the show, a buddy of mine. He, Loyola fan. He went down to watch Loyola play, and he stayed overnight in one of the nicest downtown hotels in Indianapolis. It was like $140 even during the NCAA. I mean, there's still nobody there now. Is this a one off? Where if we'd have done this in Chicago, we could have put 10 different teams separated by a floor in the Conrad Hilton because it's closed anyway. If in normal times would somebody, one team at the Motel 6 that are leading the light on and someplace somewhere else, where they spread out? Right now you could have grabbed two or three hotels in Chicago that are damn near closed and house 10 teams in each one, separated by a floor if you wanted to. And is that what they did?
Yeah, and I know they had them scattered around a little bit, but I don't know how many shared the same hotels. They built sort of a bubble, but not a bubble like the NBA had last year.
But it's not like when Southern Cal comes to Notre Dame, they stay in it's not the Motel 6, but the Country Suites in Michigan City and bus in from there. I mean, it wasn't like they were all spread around their own little motel, I don't think.
Yeah, and I'll find that out for you, Tom. I don't know for sure.
Because I have a feeling they were able to do it because nobody else was there.
I can tell you from a ratings standpoint, and I just have the championship game ratings, it was the lowest viewed championship game that aired on CBS since 1982.
Now, why is that?
I don't know. In fact, it was down significantly from the 2019 championship game. Of course, they didn't have a 2020 championship game. Down from 16.9 million viewers on Monday, a 14% decline from the 2019 game. And that game was kind of a random game between Texas Tech and Virginia, but that drew a lot more than Gonzaga versus Baylor.
Manny, I know we're about to run over here a second, but because this is your bailiwick, take a minute, will you? And how does the ratings vary with how good the game is? In other words, if all of a sudden one team is up 20-0 and everybody tunes off.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because if you remember, the Final Four this year was a really bad early game where Baylor jumped out on Houston early and blew them out, and Houston was never in the game. And apparently that game only drew 8.1 million viewers, which is down 37% from the 2019 early Final Four game. Meanwhile, the Gonzaga-UCLA game was a spectacular game that went to overtime and was back and forth, and UCLA, you know, tied it at the very end with 3 seconds left, and then Suggs came down and hit the three at the buzzer.
Yep.
That averaged 14.9 million viewers, which was they were very pleased with that result, but it peaked at almost 19 million viewers. So as that game got really, really good toward the end, a ton of people started tuning in, and that was the most watched game of the tournament.
Right, so if 50 million people start out watching it and the game's a clunk and everybody turns it off, they're not going to give you the 50 million that started.
No, they typically report on the average.
Okay.
Yep.
So if the game sucks, the average drops.
Yeah, and it really is bad if it sucks early, because then, you know, people will flip it on for 1 second and say, oh,
well,
I'm not
plus these
this.
Games were 9 o'clock.
Right. I really didn't understand the scheduling, the fact that, you know, games were on Mondays and Tuesdays, games were really, really late. I didn't get that.
Well, you know, this is one of my pet peeves anyway, but it got to where there was two games. I mean, I liked listening to Charles Barkley and the other guys. I'm telling you, it was two games in a 5.5 hour time slot.
Well, they were really keen on, especially games in the same venue, of doing a deep clean between games, sanitation-wise, because of COVID, and so they were, like, there was a lot of time between games, when normally it's, you know, 30 minutes, let the guys warm up, and then you're tipping off. It was more like 55 minutes.
And that was,
what,
a week like before the CDC came out and said you don't have to do any of that stuff?
Basically.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that the time slot was just, I mean, I just got fatigued. I mean, it's 9:30 and they're just starting this thing. I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah, you'd think if you have what is essentially a TV only event with very little live attendance and so on, that you would really make it as TV friendly for as many people as possible. But no, this is the NCAA.
Yeah,
you know, their motto: we didn't think it through.
S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 29. Kevin, thank you. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Webber on the board. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures up 20. We're trying to come back from yesterday's carnage that was seemingly triggered by the capital gains announcement out of the White House that, of course, every talking head immediately said, I knew all about that. It was in the campaign. Why are you guys surprised? And so there's always somebody that says they knew everything was going on. No, Carl always knows everything that's going on. Carl, how are you, bud?
I'm doing good. Hey, you know, you're probably not going to like my take on this.
I like everybody's take on it because I always learn.
All right. Well, let me give you mine. You know, I've been railing for years. In fact, for 20 years about this BS with stock buybacks and how they essentially are theft of equity from the shareholders and then given to the executives. And that's how they end up operating. Okay. I mean, I don't care what people claim they are. Economically, that's what they do. And then, as you know, the way this ends up working is that the executives pay 20% on the capital gains because it's long-term capital gain, right?
Right.
Like anything else. I mean, if I hold a stock for over a year, then, you know, I get long-term cap gains treatment. Okay, that's very nice. Except that they were being paid to work on the board or be an executive, so that's actually income. So what they figured out a way to do is take income and turn it into a passive capital gain and pay the 20% rate instead of the 39.6 or 36.4 or whatever, you know, whatever it is in any given year. All right. So what Biden has basically done is ruined that for company executives. And that's good.
I think that there needs to be, with a few quick changes, Carl, we could fix all this, but we're never going to see him. We're never going to see him.
No, I know. And you know what? I'll tell you what the other thing that I'd like for him to do, but he won't do it because he's not interested in actually solving problems. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that the people who are actually pulling the strings, because I don't think he has enough brain power to have figured out that this is what it's going to do, and this is I don't think this was the intent of what he's doing. Okay, but being right because you're stupid, you're still right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. However, the other half of it is get rid of the move dividends in corporate distributions above the line on the 1120.
I was just going to say make the I'm one of these guys that likes to have everybody paying even, Carl, just even type of thing.
Right.
So if your top rate and mine is 35%, I think the corporation should pay 35%. And if they pay out a dividend, they should be able to deduct the dividend because the other person's paying on that.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that what this levels one small area, and it wasn't intended to do that. This is basically one of those soak the rich proposals, okay? Which, I mean, we knew this was going to come. This was part of their campaign. But the impact of it and where it's going to fall, for the most part, is going to be on the corporate executives that have been scamming the system for the last 20 years with the buybacks and the stock option grants and things like this. That is part of their compensation package. They're not passive investors. They're not providing capital to the business. That is part of their pay for doing a job. And if I do a job and I get paid, it's supposed to be on my W-2 and I'm supposed to pay taxes as income.
Well, I think you need to even those rates up, and I think you need to bring up the $3,000 loss on capital stuff to like
$150,000. No, I should be able to expense. I mean, if I have a $100,000 loss and then I make $100,000 next year, I would be able to take the whole thing immediately against my income if I don't have $100,000 in cap gains.
Well, I remember we did a little of this in undergrad. I can't believe I can still remember this stuff when I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, Carl, but. I mean, one of the things we did at the University of Chicago was, I forget which class I was in, determine whether or not people should pay dividends. Okay, now, the formula is very simple. The formula is, if the average person can find a return on an investment of 7%, and you can find something for 15, like in your industry that you know something about, you should make the investment, because you're doing your shareholders good, because you're making better than they would. And Warren Buffett being able to go in the last, you know, when a company is in bad shape and buy it for 40 cents on the buck, which you and I could never do, that means he should make that investment versus me. However, when you start throwing the tax rates in there, where the double taxation is, okay, if we have to pay the taxes, and then I send the check to Matt Weber, and he's got to pay 40% of the $100 I sent him, on the taxes, well, I'd have to be, as a chairman of the company, I'd have to be an orangutan to not be able to do better on $100 than Maddie can do with 60. So the formula always came out to not pay the dividend, right?
Well, yeah.
Unless you were Ameritech or GE or somebody where your owners was basically ma and pa, who weren't paying that revenue. So that's one of the reasons why your lowest priced, highest distributed stocks, you know, be it telephone used to be that, wasn't Ameritech, it was Western, what was Ameritech? Because it was Lucent, which was Western Electric basically, right? I mean, those were owned by individual people and employees that were making $25,000 a year, so you have to worry about them paying 40% on taxes. So you paid good dividends on that stuff. So all this stuff, if you understand where it's coming from, there is a logic to it. But the last thing you want is every drug company not paying dividends, or Warren Buffett never paying a dividend and using the tax law as an excuse to where they just buy other places to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and whether or not they are efficient or not, or whether they're buying the right place, and it doesn't matter because they have such an advantage tax-wise. I mean, you want to get out of that trap, but we're not. We're in it, and we're going to stay in it forever, it appears.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, I am not saying that you know, that I like the idea of, you know, let's just tax and spend money, okay? Although, I have to admit that if I have a choice between print money and spend it, or tax and spend it, I like tax and spend it better because it's at least accountable to the people who can then say, hey, I don't want to pay that tax bill, I'm going to get this bum and throw him out of office.
Well,
so I mean, you know, that there is at least a connection there makes some sense.
Right. Well, but let me try and make the math a little clearer, because I think when I say it's clear, in my mind, it doesn't mean it's clear in anybody else's mind. Let's say when Bristol Myers bought Squibb, all right, I don't remember the details of the transaction, but let's say, for instance, Squibb's trading at $50, and Bristol Myers offers them 75.
Right.
Or say 70, so it's a 30-some percent increase. And you knock on the head of the Bristol Myers chairman, I don't need you to pay up 25% or 30% for a stock. Give me my dividend, and I can buy it at 50. I don't need you to buy it at 70, you bump. And he's going to say, wait a minute. After you're done with taxes, me paying for it at 70 is the same as you paying for it at 50. So let me be
right. Charged. And that's a problem.
That's been an ongoing problem for 60 years.
I have always held that you should be taxed once.
Right. Exactly right.
And that once should be at the same rate for everybody that is in similar circumstances.
I would agree.
So therefore, if you're going to have dividends, then dividends should be above the line for the corporation, so they're a deduction off the top line on the 1120, but they're taxable to the recipient. And that way, whatever my tax rate is as the recipient is my tax rate.
Right.
And if we index taxes on income, and we say, well, you know, if you're rich, you can pay a higher, you know, you can pay a high marginal rate. Okay, then that's a policy decision, but it applies to everybody. And it doesn't matter how you got the cash. The idea of preferencing capital gains is there as a means of incentivizing longer term investment. It's a reason to dissuade me from going out and trading actively and instead investing money in businesses. But when it gets perverted into being a dodge for insiders, directors, officers, people on the inside, and it's part of their compensation, but they found a way to take pay and turn it into capital gains, that's wrong and we should stop it.
Well, it's like the same thing as carried interest. That's supposed to be capital gains too, and it isn't. It's income to those guys.
It is, and it's exactly the same problem. I don't think that should be able to be done either. But that's, I mean, it, you know, I don't like the idea of seeing this kind of thing. But essentially, what this proposal is that you will pay your taxation as income tax, and then on top of that, because of what Obamacare did to people who get who get gains, you also get to pay Medicare.
By the way,
where they got that number from.
Did you see any hint of how this breaks down long term and short term yesterday? I did not. This is not long term at 43%, is it?
Yes.
So
what this proposal does, if I'm reading it correctly, and again, I only had a little while to look at it. I was on the road yesterday, so I may be wrong
on the road again
about how this works. Okay. But my understanding is essentially what this does is eliminates the long-term bracket if you make over $1 million a year.
Since you said it, you should probably go and watch on YouTube the Canned Heat at Woodstock on the road again. Spectacular. Just saying.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm just saying, if I'm understanding what this proposal actually does, and I haven't seen the legislative language.
That's even more spectacular. Because I have a...
That's what I think it does.
I have a little story for you, and I think you will understand what I'm talking about. Not that other people won't, but the saga of Dan Rostenkowski. I don't know if you know. When you were in Chicago, he was the guy here, wasn't he?
I absolutely remember Rostenkowski.
I mean, I don't know about it in a good way or a bad way, but he was an interesting sort in the sense that I'm going to say if you were to really dig into the last few years of his power in office, you're going to see a change. And it actually, Carl, you know, I rant and rave sometimes about who's really in charge. And a lot of that comes from kind of charting the last few years of Dan's political influence or lack thereof. Because he would come to the CBOE once in a while when I was on the board and we would have a breakfast and stuff. And Dan's a big... strong, you wouldn't mess with him, Polish dude that basically took no crap from anybody. I mean, it was the kind of guy he was. I mean, but he was a good guy, I mean, in a lot of ways. And if you were one of his, if Carl had a problem with Dan and wanted to talk to him, they would say, and I think he was at the, it wasn't the Gibson's, it was the, what's the other big steak place? It was the one before Gibson's. Mortons. He'd be at the Mortons. He'd be at the Mortons in Washington, you know, four nights a week or three nights a week, and the secretary would say, "Go have dinner with Dan," and there'd be a table of, you know, however many people showed up. They keep throwing a table at the end. There might be 25 people, and you'd have your, you know, 2 minutes in the daylight to talk about what was your problem. And everybody knew which lobbyist was picking up dinner. And it wouldn't be you, which would be good, because that check had to be God knows what.
But
imagine how much those guys were swilling down to the best wines and so forth. But Dan was a guy, I mean, you could talk to. And he was, at that time, had like one of the bigger political packs, because he ran unopposed. I mean, this is not a Dan biography, but he would run unopposed, but you'd send money to Dan. You still have to send money to the guy, right? I mean, that's the way politics works. And he would make a pack. And if, Carl, if one of your buddies was running in North Dakota and needed a couple grand, I mean, Dan would send him a couple grand, and he'd say, you know, I'm not asking to run your life in Congress, but one day I might need you for something, you know?
Right.
And he was like Don Corleone. It was, one day I might need a favor, but until then, you know, do what you gotta do. And all of a sudden, you know, he was just too powerful in somebody's mind for some grumpy Polish guy from the north side of Chicago. Because I don't think anybody owned Dan. If he went up to him and wanted to own him, I think he might end up with a bloody nose. I mean, he was that kind of guy. I'm not saying he was a saint, but all of a sudden he gets in trouble with stamps. Carl,
right? The post office.
Who gives a raven bleep about somebody stealing stamps in Congress? All of a sudden, he must have gone up against the wrong guy, and they wanted to change to the Dennis Hassert kind of guys, where you had something on him, you put him in there, and he owed you instead of the other way around. Because you don't see anybody of Dan's ilk now. I mean, a self-made guy like that really was beholden to nobody. I remember him, somebody at the SIBO, because you could ask questions at these breakfasts, somebody would ask him, "Dan, what's with this capital gains? I mean, for God's sake, this yearly thing, sometimes it's a year, then it's 6 months." He goes, "You know, funny you should mention that. I've been in Congress a long time." And he goes, "I think I know numbers better than most of the guys in there." He goes, "This capital gains thing has befuddled me from day one." He says, "Why the hell don't we just index it?" That's back when we had a legitimate CPI.
Right.
He goes, if you buy a building in 1980 and you sell it for 20 grand, you sell it 40 years later for 40 grand, and the CPI is up 400%, tell me how you made any money. I don't think you did. He goes, if the CPI is up 5% and the thing doubled, why should you get half off? You should pay a 95% of it. Why don't we just make it fair? He goes, "I can't get anybody to go down this road ever. I can't get five people to agree with me, much less the 100, 200 and some I need to get it passed." Because nobody wants any part of it. He goes, "To me, it's so logical." And yet every year I go, "Maybe this is my year." Then I go, "Nah."
Well, there's so much with the way that stuff's treated that it's just, you know, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I understand the logic, you know, certainly when I made the original investment in both time and money to, you know, put MCS together, that I got rewarded for that length of time, and it was, you know, substantial, that capital was tied up. It wasn't going anywhere else. It was in my business.
Oh, yeah.
That I got a substantially reduced tax rate when I sold the company and you know, was done. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. Hey, listen, I employed, 35 people at the peak? So, I mean, come on.
Yeah, but how
much taxes did they pay, right?
But what if you'd have put in, like now, Carl, when we're pumping the living bleep out of the account, what if you'd have put, I'll use a number, you put $1 million in a place and you worked your fanny off for 25 years and you sold it for $3 million. But the CPI went up 5. You didn't make any money on the sale.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that there's no indexing, which is a problem. But the other thing that's in, by the way, the other thing that's in the Biden proposal is getting rid of stepped up basis.
Really, it is in there. Wow.
Yeah, that's in there too, on death. Getting rid of stepped up basis. Now, the interesting thing about that is if you look at the history on that, that was originally done primarily because in many cases determining basis was essentially impossible after somebody died. And I have a little experience with this because after my father died, he had some stock certificates that were physical certificates still in his safe. And so, I mean, you know, of course, nobody does them anymore, right?
Well, you know what? So, I'm going to say, unbeknownst, even to you, Carl, because you're pretty up on this stuff, I'm going to say that without telling anybody, your government is basically, if you have a physical certificate, they're branding you as a money launderer. No firm will take that.
Yeah, well, hey, when my mom, you know, she wanted to turn it into cash and, you know, spend it, right, in her last years, it was a lot of fun. First off, the procedure, getting that back into a brokerage account where she could do that. And then the second thing that was interesting about it was, you know, tax time comes. Well, wait a minute, what do you pay for that?
That's a problem.
Okay. How do you report that? And so I understand, especially with a portfolio that has a lot of things in there, I understand where the original premise of this came from. It's just like, you know what? We're just gonna ignore that. We're gonna just do this, and okay, it's a sop to the survivors, but you know, part of it is a practicality argument. The thing is now, you know, I used to have to file a telephone book because I traded quite actively, and I had to track all of my own basis, and it was a pain in the patootie because the brokerages didn't do it for me. Well, now they have to report basis.
You can make it.
And so now it's easy.
Right, but we obviously we do this as a brokerage firm for people, but you can make. We've had guys that have brought in. You know, like you say, somebody died, somebody brings in their Exxon stock. If you can go back and say, God, mom's been getting this dividend since 1961, you can pretty much, and again, I'm not giving tax advice, you can pretty much drop the 1960s stock price in there without much of a problem.
Well, eventually what I ended up having to do was basically, you know, get as accurate as I could, and just was like, well, you know, if they audit you, they audit you. I mean,
and let them come up with a better price. You know,
You know, this is the best number I've got because I don't have the trade confirmed from, you know, when
might not have been a trade. It might have been gifted to them from the company.
Well, I don't know. I mean, all I know is there's a certificate, right? It's got a date on it, but yeah.
But if you did, so you know, if you knew he started getting dividends in 1961, and you took the average price of 60-61 and say Exxon was $8 or whatever it was, what are they going to come back and tell you? It was really $6? Okay, let's make it $6. What are they going to do? They can't say it was minus -50.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, you know, I told her, I said, look, when you get down to it with the splits and everything else, the reality is even if you claim zero, you're not really paying much more money, right?
Right. At some point, but right now, if you were to go somewhere, I mean, I think the formula at IB is ridiculous. RBC is a little better. But, I mean, they want you to have an account, not just at PTI, but at IB or something. I mean, if you're an IB correspondent, you know, $250,000 in the account for, like, 2 years or something. That's if you went to work for, you know, Matt Weber, Inc., and where you're a consultant, and you say, well, I don't want to get paid. How about giving me 5,000 shares? And he gives you a certificate. Try and get that in anywhere. I mean, you know, I'm not saying they're wrong, Carl. I mean, I honestly don't. I'm not that much of a thief, so I can't imagine this stuff very well. I don't get the connection between having paper securities and being a money launderer. I just don't. If I was going to be a money launderer, that would be the last thing I would do. But there must be something about it that people have figured out that I haven't. But I don't see why that stock I can't sell. I mean, the thing's trading. Because I have, and you can go to the transfer agent, you can go to the chairman of the company and said, I paid Carol 5,000 shares for doing some consulting work for me. Well, let's see the contract. Let's see this. What do you really do for? I mean, I don't get the. Maybe you can enlighten me. What's the connection between you working for stock and you being a money launderer? I don't get it.
I have no idea, but I know what you're talking about. I mean, I went through this whole thing when, you know, like I said, after my father died, and, you know, there's a couple of certificates here, and it's like, well, you know, that's money. Let's, you know, she's like, well, you know, I want to spend it. Okay, well, you know, we can do that. And then I found out how much fun it was to actually be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, out of all the things that people can be no good in Exxon, having some paper stack in your mom's safety deposit box I mean, how that even remotely points your finger at her saying you must be a money launderer internationally? I don't get it. I mean, a lot of stuff. I mean, I get the part if somebody walks in looking like they just got off their private jet from you know, some places around the rest of the world with a suitcase full of cash. That I'll say, well, maybe what asks this guy where he got the cash. But I'm not dumb enough to think that that's something that maybe somebody should look into. I'm not so sure that somebody should be me. But I mean, if a guy walks in from, hey, I was a consultant to this place 10 years ago, and by the way, here's 5,000 shares. Oh, we can't sell that. You're a money launderer. What are you talking about? It's just.
Yeah, I don't know. I just took a look at all this, and I'm like, well, you know, but I'm going to have to dig into the legislative language when it actually shows up. But part of the reason I think you saw a freak out, though, you know, yesterday in the market to some extent, is that this actually has a decent chance of happening because they can put it through reconciliation.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think a lot of it has to do, Carl, with the stocks being this high.
Well, there's that, and then, you know, and then the crypto people are having a spaz over it as well, so.
Well, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about that, because it's funny if you read the, I've read this book about the Crash 29, and I listened to the, I always forget the guy's name, the guy did the Civil War stuff, he did the thing on the Crash, too. Matty always remembers his name when I don't. Anyway, he's done the stuff on baseball and everything, but you know, you back in those days, you're basically your banks, they were the pump and dumpers, right? They'd say, Carl, right. you should buy this stock. It's really good. Well, do you have any fundamental balance sheets? Well, no. Who are you buying it from?
Right.
Well, me. That's basically what, I mean, when people look at the 33 and 34 of Securities Acts, I mean, a lot of the stuff was, hey, you gotta have an audited statement. Well, duh. I mean, now you'd look at that and say, well, who would ever believe you if you didn't, you know? Or you'd have to have a, you know, you should have a, before you send stock to people, they should be able to read a prospectus and say, what do these guys actually do? Who are the players? Who's the president? I mean, people didn't have any of that stuff, right? Back in the,
right.
Well, but, so now, you know, we're into this, here we are, how many years later? That was 1933. So let's push 80 years forward. And now we've got, make that 90 years. And we've got, a bunch of bumps on TV to go out and buy their first Bitcoin. The first thing they do is get on CNBC and tell you what a great buy it is. Now you should go buy some. I mean, it never changes, does it? Somebody buys something, tells somebody else what a great buy it is, and is anxious to sell it to them.
hey, tulips, I'm telling you, man, they're beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you heard me last week. I actually did some research into that where the tulip got to 4,000 to 5,000 florins, which was the whatever the coin at the time, and something like 100 florins was 1,000 gallons of beer, which of course totally set Matty Weber off. Wait a minute, some flowers worth 100 times more than 1,000 gallons of beer? What the hell are these people thinking? SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck?
Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm always Mr. Brett Weber. SP Futures up 2 and NASDAQ Futures up 16, so we're bouncing off yesterday's fiasco on the capital gains number, but the bounce is getting smaller and smaller. It's down to being a dead cat bounce, maybe. Let's say that.
Dow's I love that. unless you're a cat.
Yeah, unless you're a cat. Dow's actually down 29, so not any bounce there at all. The number of American Express had earnings last night, they're down 566. That's the biggest mover in the Dow. I did not do anything in there, so good. Good on that. Dodged one there. Over in Europe, the DAX now down 124.8%. FTSE down 41.6%. CAC down 31.5%. For Asia, Nikkei down 167. Oh, they were huge up yesterday. That's 0.6%. Shanghai up 9.3%. Hang Seng up 323. That's 1.1%. Again, these guys are going in different directions like every day. As a way of review, yesterday, Dow down 321.9%. S&P down 38.9%. NASDAQ down 131.9%. All across the board, which is rare. Bonds, minus 2 basis points, 1.53. 1 minus 0.27. Japan, a positive 0.07. We got oil up 2 cents, 61.45. Brent down 10 cents, 65.30. Not much going on in the oil patch. Natural gas, unchanged, 274. Arbob unchanged, 197. Well, gold, which has had a big week, is up again today, up 1240, 1794. Silver up 17 cents, 26.35. Copper up 4 cents, 4.31. So it's got to be back up near the top on the copper. Crypto, Bitcoin, whack, whack, whack. Back on, down under 50,000, Maddie, 49,682. It's down 3,300 bucks. We have had people that have said 50,000 is kind of a spot in the graph. I don't know if these things even have technical stuff, but if they had
the
one.
Chart, Chief. The chart.
The chart. That's right, the chart. Where's Kevin Reardon bitching at me? What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the south side, I-57 northbound, just before Dixie Highway. This accident is blocking the two right lanes with crews arriving on the scene. So some stop-and-go congestion because of that crash on I-57. Keep that in mind if you're heading inbound. We had an earlier crash on the Ryan. It looks like the Dan Ryan local lanes on the outbound side just before getting on the Skyway there. That crash is moved to the top of 71st Street with crews on the scene. So the crash is technically cleared now, but some congestion on the outbound Ryan local lanes because of that.
No issues on the Bishop Ford right now. Stevenson's still looking good. Same for the Eisenhower. Kennedy, you're starting to see some traffic volumes build up and no accidents to report. Eden's looking good. Lakeshore Drive quiet in both directions. Only other crash in the area is in the northwestern suburbs. Route 53 on the eastbound side, right before Beesterfield Road, there is an accident on the right shoulder. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early and then some sunshine later on. We'll warm up to our normal highs finally after a week of very chilly weather. Partly cloudy with a high of 61 today. Right now it's clear and 46. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 86. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, the Cubs have won 3 in a row after sweeping the Mets at Wrigley, winning last night 4-3 in 10 innings. Jason Hayward with the walk-off RBI single. White Sox were off last night. They're back in action down at Guaranteed Rate tonight against the Rangers. That's a 7:10 p.m. first pitch. Diamondbacks beat the Reds 14-11 in 10 innings yesterday. NBA hoops, Bulls blew out the Hornets 108-91. Suns lost to the Celtics 99-86. And in hockey, no action last night, but the Blackhawks are back tonight hosting the Predators at the UC. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time puck drop. Chief.
Carl, without going into massive amounts of detail, it appears that the 3.8% investment tax that's added to this 39-something that gets it up to 43 is for people who make over 200 grand a year, correct? So it's what I read yesterday. Now,
the 3.8 is that's the that's Medicare.
But you're paying that on, if you make over 200 grand a year, you got to pay that on capital gains. If you don't, you don't.
Correct. That's the 3.8 is not a separate tax. It is that it is the two halves of Medicare that you would otherwise pay on, for example, self-employment income.
All right. So my question is this number, this 39-point-something percent, is for people who are making over $1 million, correct?
Correct. So basically, you're in that top bracket. And you're paying the ordinary income rate plus the Medicare rate.
Okay, so my question is the capital gain that they're hitting you up on, that they're disemboweling you on, is that inclusive of the number? My question is if somebody, you know, say young couple like Matt and Jill's doing everything the right way, and they're having, you know, they're doing well. They both got good jobs, working their fannies off. They're making $2.25 a year as a couple, okay? And all of a sudden, they somehow or another buy stock in whatever it is, GM or someplace, and they caught it at the lows, and 10 years from now, they sell it, and they're going to make $1 million on their GM. Maybe it was left to them by their dad, whatever it was. Now, does the $1 million get added to the $200,000? So for that year, they made $1 million and have to pay this new number, or... Is there ordinary income? What causes the number to be? In other words, are they paying as if they're $225,000 a year people, or whether they're $1,225,000 people?
Well, I don't know, and this is part of the reason that I want to see the legislative language, because this kind of surprise burned a bunch of people when Obamacare first came in, and all of a sudden Maggie. MAGI was added into the tax code, and as a result, let's say that you bought municipal bonds because you didn't have to pay federal income tax on the dividends that got kicked off, right?
Right.
Well, guess what? That destroyed your Obamacare subsidy because it counts, even though you don't pay tax on it, it counts for your subsidy computation, so you could actually end up with a negative return on the coupon.
Okay.
Because you could, you know, as you went from like $20,000 to $40,000, you lost the subsidy. Okay, well, if you were an older person but weren't yet on Medicare, you could see yourself, you could easily see $1,200-$1,500 a month come off that subsidy. Well, that might be more than you were making in the, you know, I mean, because you think about it, if you're making, you know, $1,000 a month in tax-exempt interest, well, that's $12,000. Well, guess what? That puts you off the top of that subsidy band, and you end up paying the entire bill on Obamacare. They essentially confiscated all of your tax-exempt interest.
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting, Carl, because it's, again, my I don't know if it's my favorite movie, but it is an interesting movie. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And the best line ever is when the legend conflicts with the facts, print the legend. The whole idea that that if you ask any, if you're in any kind of Republican bar, if there isn't a Ronald Reagan picture in there, there ought to be. And God help you if you say something bad about Dutch, right? Well, people forget or never knew, or never cared to know, that inflation is a dramatic tax increaser, right? In Reagan's time, all they do is talk about how much he lowered rates. He was able to lower rates and actually still increase taxes because of the amount of inflation. He got rid of some of the brackets and lowered the prices in some of the brackets. But it looked like he was giving you a huge break. But at the end of the year, inflation was up 10%. So if you had any kind of a COLA increase, your wages went up 10%, which dropped you into the next bracket. And God help you, if you didn't have COLA, then you were really screwed, right? But if you did have it, the guy who at the end of the inflation time was making 40 grand instead of 20, actually is now paying 20% instead of 15, so he actually was worse off. And so, but this is what is happening again with this, right? I mean, we're running into this inflationary period, and we're going to find a way to screw people because of the inflation. I mean, we're going to say, God, somebody making 100 grand a year. God's sake, Carl, if you took the median income in 2000, it was 31,000. Even using the ridiculous CPI number they're giving us, that number should be 45 or 50, and it's 38. I mean, so we're inflating people into the poorhouse again, I think.
But one of the points I tried to make about this when this whole thing started with the whole, let's just solve every problem by throwing federal money at it, okay? Is that it inevitably reflects back into prices, and when they did it the last time, and it started with repression. If you remember, during the 40s and 50s, after World War II, the Federal Reserve clamped the long end of bond rates. And this was, this was a free lunch. And everybody thought it was for like 20 years, right? Nobody thought there was ever going to be a serious problem from it. Well, guess what? There was. And the problem with it is that the adaptive solution that had to be adopted was the second person in every household ended up having to go to work. Otherwise, you were going to starve.
Right.
Well, guess what? We already used that one up. The second person's already working.
Well, that's right. And the thing that's sort of bizarre, and I think she's terrific, so I'll say something nice about her. Joan Esposito's had me on her show a few times, Carl. And of course, I haven't really been invited back. Unlike me, who invites people back to say some weird stuff because I learned from it, I don't think the station liked me all that much. I mean, she said something to the effect of, I don't have any debt or something along those lines, and I'm glad she doesn't. She's a great lady. I said, oh yeah, you do. And she goes, she goes, what do you mean I do? And of course, the phones are lighting up. Actually, I got to explain. I said, Joan, in the last 8 years, the amount of money you owe, your implied debt to the federal government just went from, 80 grand to like 200. And so don't think you don't. And she goes, well, thanks for like ruining my day. I said, well, Joan, look at what's happening in Chicago. Nobody cared. Or nobody thought that the deficits they're running really affected you or me who live in the city. I said, but Emmanuel, the Ron father's first 4 years, he upped all the fees that if you looked at the fee increases and anything that possibly would for standing, parking fees, you name it, it was equivalent to a 45% increase in property taxes. In the second term, he did increase property taxes by roughly 50%. So you've essentially doubled in 8 years. So you can't think for a second that this is not coming to bite you in the behind. It's going to. I mean, these guys last year spent essentially 3 years of tax income. If you take the payroll tax out, just look at the income tax. They spent 3 years of income tax last year in 1 year. You can't think for a second that that's that that's a freebie. I mean, it's going to come back. Just a question of what part of the body it's going to bite you on. I mean how does anybody think it won't? I mean, the 1,400 hours.
But see, that's the thing is these guys they don't even look at history. You know, this is part of the problem with burning history. No matter how you do it, whether you take down statutes or you know whatever, is that people think that this is some novel thing that's you know, hey, we've come up with this brand new idea. No, you haven't.
No, I mean, this was the mercantilist theory. It was what, the 1600s. These guys were ahead of the game back then. This is not new.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, well, we can do this and it won't have terrorists. You know what? You did this, the Fed and their bond clamping and and their quantitative easing and their whatever. Everybody's like, oh no, this is a new thing. No, it is not a new thing. And oh, by the way, the idea of clamping the long end was done after World War II, and it you look at what happened in the late 70s and early 80s.
Well, the Romans kept pulling silver out of the coin back in Roman times. They figured it out. Duh.
Well, you know, it goes all the way back to Hammurabi. People say, well, you know, they had gold deposits. Yeah, well, guess what? The bankers figured out that they could issue 10 chits and they only had 8 bars of gold.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, you wonder why we don't get there. But this time, every once in a while, Carl, I mean, I don't really. People will say everybody always kind of cheated the government. Well, I don't. There's cheating and there's not cheating. And one of the most interesting classes I remember from Milton Friedman, because of course he was teaching the theory of price. And to tell you how much he thought about it, he had a manuscript that was supposed to be the book for the class. Well, he got so bored with it, he never finished the manuscript, but used it anyway. So it gave you an idea of how interested he was in the theory of price versus other stuff. So, but people would knock him off topic all the time. And he would, and one day it was interesting because if you say what he just said verbatim, like, you know, some boob on TV, people would say the guy was an idiot, but he wasn't an idiot. Somebody said, what about federal deficits? And he said, I'm going to say they don't make any difference. And now think of the times. They were talking about World War II times after that. I mean, he was older. I mean, he was old in 75 when I was there. Look at the difference. He goes, your country is like a house. It's like a family. He goes, if you owe your wife $100, who cares driving by the house? The house is flat. It doesn't matter whether you owe your wife $100 or she owes you. The net value of the home, the balance sheet of the people, the inhabitants, are the same. He goes, so if your federal government, like during the war, went out and borrowed money from the citizenry, it's an asset on the citizenship balance sheet, it's a liability on the government's balance sheet. What's the difference? But he obviously didn't figure that we're going to start lending this money to other people. Okay, now right. All of a sudden you got a problem, right? But so we keep changing sort of this around. Well, right now we're not borrowing anything. We're just printing, or we're moving the stuff around. And we're trying to that this person's a winner this time around and this person's a loser. And but I think in World War II it almost didn't matter, Carl. If you and I were PT boat or PT engine manufacturers. In, you know, say we were in Inglewood or someplace, and somehow or another, you know, you're better at this than me. We found a way to weasel, 5% more for the motors than we should have. Okay, it was an auction. It should have been $50,000 a motor, and guess what? Because of your sneaking around, I'm going to say you're sneaking around, not me. We got $52,000. Well, so what? The two of us get the two extra grand. We go to the local bar. We buy everybody around. The money just gets spread around. It's money that's these guys might have paid a little extra in their taxes, and guess what? They got a free beer. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying that, but the level at which it was, and the money stayed in the same place. Well, now that's not happening. The money is going overseas. Right. The money's you're going to have a company here that somehow has amazing largesse and political power where some drug company, where it's billions of dollars that are now overseas. There's no taxes being paid here, and I haven't had the chairman of Pfizer come in and buy me a drink in a Tripoli yet, and I don't think it happened anytime soon, do you? I mean, it's a whole different, to me, it's a whole different brand of ball, and it's what, you know, people talk about all the time with this, you know, this federal, not federalism, but this worldwide stuff. We're going to steal money out of Ireland, but we're going to spend it in Amsterdam, or we're going to spend it. That's a whole different throw. And I honestly, my mind isn't big enough to put my hands around it. Maybe you can, but it's something that we don't need. I'm going to say guys like Obama and Trump and Biden trying to figure it out, because I think it's way above their pay grade. I really do. And the people around them are more anxious to steal from them than helping them out. Is my read of this.
Well, I think is one of the biggest problems is that these bills are not written by the legislators, and they certainly aren't written by Biden.
No.
Who wrote this? Well, a bunch of dudes on King Street, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have figured out some way to scam it. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, I read one of the first times I read a bill in a while because it might have impacted PTI, but the Employee Retention Act, part of this, you know, not the PPP, but there's something else called the Employee Retention Act where you can get paid for if you paid your people during the pandemic and were forced to be closed, that you would get some of that money back. Now, whether it's a good idea, bad idea, whatever, I was just looking to see if maybe we qualified, which we don't, which is fine. You know, we're fine. But I read it, Carl. I'm not as dumb as I sound. I couldn't have been two paragraphs into this thing and said, "Oh my God, a guy from the restaurant industry wrote this." I mean, maybe you are indoctrinating me, and Hal Snar and all the other people on the show are finally getting me to wise up. I'm reading this thing. I'm going, "Who the bleep wrote this? This is insane." I mean, this is absolutely insane. It comes down to, now I'm not saying that PTI deserves a dime. I mean, we're fine, you know, so we probably shouldn't, okay? But also a lot of other people didn't deserve it, whatever. That's not the point. The point is that if you're essential services and non-essential services. Now, if you're right. An essential service, being a bank, a hardware store, a securities firm, because, you know, people have to do their trades. If you somehow, despite the up bridges and the no L's running, if we were able to get one or two people down here, because I knew the bridge by the post office would always be open, right, because the post office is there, we were able to get here, the only people in the building, we were able to service our clients, fine. You know, I mean, but now when you say service your clients, we were never able to have a new client come to the office. We were never able to meet one right. At a restaurant. So, I mean, in terms of were we partially shut down from doing our business? God, yes. You know, probably 80%. We were able to maintain and do stuff for current people to the point where they never noticed the difference. That if somebody was home, we set up a computer at home, we did those kinds of things. We did what we were supposed to do, which we would have done anyway, because that's what we do for people. That's our job. But to say for a hound's 2 second that we weren't affected or partially shut down is so damn ignorant I can't even go there. But because we were essential, we were okay. Now, Lakeside Bank across the street, they always had one or two people at a teller and somebody sitting at the chair and a security guard in the building. Okay, they normally have 20 people there. They didn't have a client and God knows when. To say that they were not partially shut down and affected by this is so stone cold ignorant, Carl, I can't even go there. Yet because they're an essential business, they can't be any part of this. Yet a restaurant, which is not essential, that has the bar shut down and tripled up on the amount of pizzas and had the best year ever last year, they get all their money back that they paid their employees because they're non-essential.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's one of the things that I tried to point out to people, you know, that down by where I live, the Airbnb and VRBO guys have been just raking in the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been raising the prices and raising the price. I mean, they literally have had the best year they ever had during the lockdowns because there was no way to stop somebody from getting in the car and driving down there, and they could sit there and stare at the mountains and get drunk and lay in the hot tub.
But now, if they were essential business, they didn't make a dime. But if they're non-essential, which they were, they can go get all this money back because they were part. They were allegedly partially shut down.
The check that still has to clean the place after these guys leave, right?
Right.
And so, but you know, so we employed those. So guess what? That is purely leisure. And yet, oh no, we get all the money back that we paid that girl to clean the unit after it was over.
But if you're essential, you don't get any of it back.
Well, that's right. And you know what? The grocery store up the street, oh, too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and by the way, if that store isn't open, everybody starves.
Right. Well, and, you know, they actually had somebody on CNBC. I never thought he'd say that because I say it all the time. And he said, I don't understand. They're asking about some of these programs. And he goes, I still don't understand why the Mon Pop clothing store had to close when Target is selling clothes. And I don't think, when you look at company, I don't know how much you've been around Chicago, but they finally have like two Walmarts in the city limits, maybe, or something. There's one where Pullman used to be. But there's a couple. It might be as many as five, but just recently. But because they had this massive vendetta against Walmart in the city. But Target was fine. For somehow or another, somebody jammed the right amount of stock in somebody's back pocket in Target. Target pretty much owns Chicago now. They're all over the place. They got small ones, middle ones, you name it. They're in State Street. They're on Michigan Avenue. They're everywhere. And so Target never shed a tear during this part. And the funny part, Carol, why was Macy's? And I hope the guys listen. Why were they so dumb as to not put a food aisle on the first floor and say we're selling food and stay open? Why didn't they just play the game?
Well, I don't know. You'd think they would. I mean, you know, all you'd have to do, all you need is your boxes of cereal, right?
Yeah. A few cans of corn. Maddie can go in there and practice center field, flip one off the top, can of corn, catch it, you know? Anyway, Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Thank you for helping me out on that because I didn't get a chance to read that, and you are informative as usual. Have a nice weekend down in Tennessee. Is that where you are this weekend?
Well, no, I'm out traveling, having a little fun.
On the road again. We'll play the song from Woodstock. SP Futures up 350. SP Futures up 21. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.